Your 12-year-old daughter Emily has recently had a growth spurt. Ever since then, she has been standing unusually. One of her shoulders is higher than the other, her hips are uneven, and her head is no longer centered. You decide to bring this up at your next pediatrician appointment. Hello and welcome to Anatomy of Illness. Today's episode is about scoliosis. Before we get into the condition, we are going to start with the history, so why we know scoliosis exists. So interestingly enough, the ancient Egyptians had a king with scoliosis. This was the pharaoh Tutankhamun. In ancient Egypt, differences in disabilities could be a lot more accepted than in later societies of ancient Greece and ancient Rome. In ancient Egypt, nobles would have people with disabilities as part of their advisors and other important parts of their household. In some cases, disabilities were seen as marks of divinity. Moving on to ancient Greece, where we start with Hippocrates, a frequent character in our time travels of disease history. Hippocrates was the first person to describe the abnormal spinal curvature in Western medical literature. He first coined the term scoliosis. The original thought behind the cause of the condition was that it was caused by bad posture. It is not. Other than diet, yes, diet was recommended as a way to fix your spine. His recommended treatment for this was the Hippocratic ladder. The patient was tied to a ladder and shaken. If the hump is closer to the neck, the person was tied upright. However, if it was lower down, the person was tied upside down. The reasoning for this was that the body's weight would straighten the curve. If this didn't work, they would try the Hippocratic board. If you've ever seen those medieval torture devices where they crank a wheel and dislocate your limbs, well, this looks similar. This one had something like a crank at the end where you could apply traction while someone would put pressure on the curve or hump. If that didn't work, he had the Hippocratic scamnum. This was similar but with a pole and having to tie the person to the machine in a specific manner. At this time, ancient Greeks did not take too kindly to those who looked different. Aristotle went as far as proposing a law to try and prevent parents from raising children with disabilities. This is horrific and would not pass in today's society. Claudius Galen, better known as Galen, refined scoliosis into three different diagnoses: scoliosis, lordosis, and kyphosis. This is to do with the shape of the curve and where the curve is. Galen's treatment methods weren't much better, as Galen believed that loud singing and arguing could help with thoracic distortion. He did also recommend Hippocrates' more intense methods, as he did not really believe in the Hippocratic ladder to shake out scoliosis. In the times of the ancient Greeks, it was essentially two options: treatment akin to torture or loud singing. I would personally take a karaoke session any day over Hippocrates shaking me upside down on a ladder. Ancient Rome was not much better for the treatment of those with disabilities. Slaves with visible disabilities were kept as a form of entertainment for house guests. Like in Greco-Roman society, in the medieval period, disabilities and visible differences were perceived to come from sinfulness. I would like to point out that this is not medically accurate. Any physical deformity was seen as a reflection of the moral depravity of the soul, and that the sin being punished was merely an infringement on church law. An actual example of this: they believed deformed or disabled children could be conceived as a result of a woman not abstaining from intercourse prior to churching after childbirth. Essentially, don't make a new baby straight after having one without stopping by the church first. I would love to know the scientific study that came up with that conclusion, but either way, we no longer believe in that. During the medieval times, beggars were often people with visible disabilities that were rejected by society, but in some cases received charitable assistance. English King Richard III, who lived from 1452 to 1485, had scoliosis. The reason we know this will be brought up later in the history. He was considered to be a bit morally depraved because of his actions. He was also known as the Hunchback Monarch. Anyway, William Shakespeare, who lived from 1564 to 1616, loved to comment on Richard III's scoliosis, describing him as a poisonous bunched back toad. Obviously, he had beef with a man he'd never met or been alive at the same time as. I was obviously not alive at the same time, so I cannot comment on their relationship or lack thereof. King Richard was not the only royal with scoliosis. Princess Anna Vasa, who lived from 1568 to 1625, also had scoliosis. She was the advisor to her brother, King Sigismund III of Poland. She was discovered many, many years later, which will be brought up in the future, which is a couple hundred years in our timeline. In the 16th century, the first scoliosis brace was developed by French army surgeon Ambroise Paré. This brace was made out of iron, the 16th century being the 1500s. In 1741, Nicolas Ansoy writes a treatise on scoliosis, calling it orthopedia. This literally means straight child. You may know the term orthopedics, which comes from this word. as he thought it was an issue resulting from a muscle imbalance. Because of beliefs like Andre, there was a large movement to repair scoliosis through strengthening of the muscles and exercise, which is evident in cases like Ling. Jean-André Venel, who lived from 1740 to 1791, founded an institute in Orbe, Switzerland. He believed mechanical traction was the way to go. Treating patients with an extension bed at night that, according to him, eliminates gravity in the horizontal position, and during the day using a corset. I have consulted a physicist. Apparently this isn't how gravity works. You can't just turn it off by lying down. In 1764, Françoise Guillaume Levasseur de la Fouetterie develops the first mechanical bed in France. The original purpose of this machine was to cure rickets, a bone condition caused by vitamin D deficiency in children. The machine was used on children to push on the bumps. Levasseur also developed a device called the extension chair, which applied pressure to the curvature without putting traction on it. This was specifically for scoliosis. And the Minerva jacket, which held the spine in a corrected position without using traction. In the early 1800s is where Ling's Swedish exercises first appear. Who was Ling? Well, Swedish fencing master Per Henrik Ling lived from 1776 to 1839. He was the first to develop a remedial exercise program. Remedial being a remedy or a treatment. A little bit about Ling, since he's an interesting character. He learned fencing at the University of Copenhagen. During his time there, he became obsessed with old Viking sagas, becoming obsessed with the idea of physical prowess as an emblem of manhood. So physical skill being a symbol of your manliness. As part of his obsession with Vikings, he wrote his own Norse sagas. However, these have been lost to time as his writing skills were not up to the same level as his fencing. Historical evidence of stick to your day job. So how did Ling's Swedish exercises come about? Around 1813, he was hired at the University of Lund. He studied anatomy there, which is where he gained the idea that gymnastics could cure some anatomical defects. These exercises were done in groups in unison. Kind of like jazzercise or whatever exercise class is currently popular at the gym. Ling's classes continued well after his death. They may not have fixed scoliosis, but they did at least promote community and fitness. In 1816, in Würzburg, Germany, an orthopedic mechanic by the name of Johann Georg Hein founded the first German orthopedic institute. This was originally called the Carolinen Institute. This institute no longer exists as it was destroyed and not rebuilt. This was replaced by the König Ludwig Haus. Hein is known as the founder of orthopedics in Germany. At the Carolinen Institute, he invented the Würzburg bed. This was an adaptation on Venel's bed and had an adjustable incline. Charles Gabriel Prévaz thought the idea of the Würzburg bed being horizontal was not helping people. So he invented a version where the patient would be upright for up to 2 hours with traction that was not more than they could handle. Thankfully, there was no adverse effects of this. It was recognized as early as 1820 that too much traction on the spinal cord was not a good thing. Pulling someone too hard, especially at both ends, could lead to paralysis. The Royal Academy of Medicine did get involved to discredit certain devices and techniques. In the 1820s, Charles Auguste Maisonab introduced his own version of the mechanical bed. This bed used weights attached to the pelvis and head and strong traction, also including a scale to show how far the weights had moved. He realized you can't actually measure the resistance of the spinal column, so he suggested to pull the patient's head to gauge the amount of weight needed. It was recommended to err on the side of caution when manually pulling the patient's head as it was not a good place to be yanking. Also in 1820, Edward Harrison established a clinic in London specifically for the treatment of spinal deformities. His technique being manipulation of the spine, similar to chiropractic techniques. However, the medical establishment was not keen on this. In 1835, J. Hossard made the first mechanically adjustable brace to correct spinal curvatures inside of a corset. This would be helpful for future bracing techniques. Another person keen on the idea that exercise could fix it was Matthias Roth. He was a Hungarian man who also went by Bernard, living from 1818 to 1891. He studied medicine in Vienna and Padua, returning to Hungary to fight in the war for independence in 1849, fleeing to London as the war was not very successful. In London, he saw one of Ling's classes being conducted by Karl August Georgi, a disciple of Ling, at a hospital he was working at. Roth builds upon the techniques and even includes women, eventually founding the Ladies Sanitary Association. This association was used to help with disease prevention through education in poorer communities. Roth also invented a way of measuring the spinal curvature. This was a lead strip that could be molded to the back of a patient's spine and traced onto paper to keep a record of the severity. In the later years of his life, he gained more interest in politics, which led to the passing of a bill that made teaching physical education part of education in state schools. So if you loved PE or hated PE, you have Roth to thank. Now we move on to Swedish violinist and composer Franz Berwald, who lived in 1769 to 1868. In 1835, he opened up an orthopedic clinic in Berlin for the treatment of scoliosis in young girls. He based a lot of his treatments on Ling's foundations. He had residents that him and his wife cared for and used equipment he had invented. He even received praise from both the Berlin police and physicians at the Karolinska Hospital. I'm not too sure what Berlin police knew about scoliosis or treatment of spinal conditions, but hey, they praised him. He did, however, about 9 years later, sell the clinic, move to Stockholm, and have success in his music career. So yeah, he didn't keep his day job. In 1865, someone else comes on board. Gustav Zander. He sets up a medico-mechanical institute, as he believed that the benefits of gymnastics were only available to those fit enough to stand the strain of vigorous exercise. He wrote that ladies, young girls, elderly men, and weakly persons of either sex are almost entirely excluded from exercise. His business was very successful, having 202 different clinics at one point, with many claims on what the machines could cure or help with depending on the location of the clinic. This included scoliosis, stiff joints, sciatica, and even constipation. Yeah, I don't get how that comes in with joint issues, but hey, he was helping, according to him. Also, at some point in the 1800s, a man called Louis Sayer begins using a technique called the plaster jacket. This technique involves a large tripod that the patient would stand under, their head would be placed in a traction device, and a cast would be formed of their spine and straightened into position. It is a very weird looking thing, but it is super cool if you can look it up. In 1911, Russell Hibbs was the first to publish about surgery in an attempt to fix scoliosis through spinal fusion. The surgeries were a first step in the right direction, however, the processes used did not lead to a high success rate. Once no longer using supports like braces, they often recurved. Paul Harrington was the first to use implants as a way of fixing the curvature. He used a single stainless steel rod implanted in the back to attach to the top and bottom of the spine. This method did have some drawbacks, as it could lead to a condition called flat back syndrome in some cases. This led to a lot of pain. Pierre Stagnata from France built upon Harrington's technique using halo traction. This is a frame around the skull to stabilize and make the spine a little straighter and easier to maneuver prior to surgery. After this, he would use Harrington's method. In the 1970s, Eduardo Luque from Mexico City develops a technique using wires that go between the spinal cord and the lamina with L-shaped rods. The lamina is the roof part of the spinal vertebrae, which is the bones. This is the part that you would feel if you were to touch someone's back. This surgery was helpful as it distributed the load equally and supported the back well without needing bracing afterwards. However, it came with a risk of neurological injury, as when you're in the space with the spinal cord, you can accidentally nick it, but you can also cause paralysis from straightening too enthusiastically. Pull too hard and too fast and it doesn't end well. There were several other improvements from 1970s to now, including the use of pedicle screws, different metals, and techniques, including the 1990s development of the universal spine system. This used screws to attach a rod to the original curvature and would pull the spine into place once attached. Now, let's move on to some interesting stuff in the history. In 1994, a church restoration causes the discovery of the body of Princess Anna Vesa. Moving on, it is 2012. We are in a council car park in the English city of Leicester. Why are we here? Because it's time to accidentally dig up a king. Yes, that's right. King Richard III was found underneath a car park. They realized it was him because of the curvature of his spine. This was seen in paintings, and it wasn't originally realized how bad it was until they dug him up. Also in 2012, the US National Institute of Health released a pamphlet on scoliosis stating that exercise was not curative. So what's the cause of scoliosis and what are the demographics? About 4 in 100 adolescents have scoliosis. Scoliosis can actually be familial. So about 30% of adolescent idiopathic scoliosis patients have a family history of scoliosis. And about 1 in 3 children who have a parent with scoliosis will go on to develop scoliosis. It is considered to be partly genetic in cause. However, there is no known gene to date. The cause in most cases is not known. However, there are a few medical associations. These are normally quite rare. Certain neuromuscular conditions such as cerebral palsy or muscular dystrophy. Cerebral palsy is a group of congenital disorders caused by damage to a developing brain. Muscular dystrophy is a group of genetic conditions that causes progressive weakness and loss of muscle mass. An example of this is Duchenne muscular dystrophy. This is normally seen in boys. Another cause is birth defects, affecting specifically the bones of the spine. such as spina bifida. This is a defect where the spinal cord and spine does not form properly. Previous surgery on the chest wall is baby. This may be for conditions like pectus excavatum, where the ribs and sternum grow inward, leaving a dent in the chest. You may have heard it referred to as funnel chest or sunken chest. Normally, surgery is only performed on very severe cases in infancy, otherwise they let you grow up and deal with it eventually. Injuries or infections in the spine. So just any really bad injury can cause it. You can get it in adulthood, but this is very rare, and that's normally lumbar rather than thoracic. So yeah, it really depends. There's also spinal cord irregularities. Girls are also more likely to have a severe curvature or progression of the curvature than boys. However, it's 50-50 boys versus girls. Being one gender over the other doesn't mean you're more likely to have it. So, how do we diagnose scoliosis? A doctor will start with a physical observation, so looking at you from many perspectives, doing various different things such as walking, bending down, standing. A doctor will also use a device called a scoliometer. This will be placed over the area of the possible curvature to give the doctor an estimate of the curvature. After a physical exam, x-rays will be used to determine the actual curvature. These will be taken standing, normally, from the back and the side. A curvature of more than 10 degrees is considered scoliosis. However, it isn't normally treated unless the curve is greater than 25 degrees. We'll get right into symptoms and presentation right after this little break. So what are the symptoms? What would you see as a parent? This would normally happen around the time of a growth spurt, so when your child's growing, because most cases normally occur during the puberty times, but it can occur before, it can occur after, but it normally only occurs in growth states. So you may see that your child has uneven shoulders. So one may be slightly higher up than the other, and their head isn't centered, so maybe looking tilted to one side. They'll be potentially constantly leaning on one side, or at least looking that way. They may also be getting slightly shorter than the last time you measured, which is weird considering they're supposed to be growing. When they bend over, their back will be uneven. So one side will be slightly higher than the other, and the spine will also be visibly curved. It may not be like a massive curve, C shape, but there will be like a slight bend. It may be harder to see in some cases. So what might a doctor see? A person with scoliosis will either have a C or an S-shaped curve in their spine. This is most commonly at the thoracic spine level. This is the chest area where the rib cage attaches. The spine can curve sideways and twist, causing the ribs to look uneven. Pain is uncommon in scoliosis, however, it can still occur. An uneven waist, so one side will be higher than the other. Uneven leg length, one leg being slightly longer than the other. Difference in shoulder blade position. One may be higher up and more prominent. The head may not be centered over the pelvis, so it may look a bit tilted, may be a bit out of the way. Uneven shoulders, one may be higher up than the other. Unequal gaps between the arm and the trunk. This is more noticeable with larger curvatures, but one will be touching the side completely, the other will have like a little triangle gap in between the arm and the, I guess you could say, like area between the hip. And in more progressed cases, you may see arthritis, pain, nerve damage, difficulty breathing, and several other concerning symptoms. So, how do we treat scoliosis? When a child is still growing and has moderate scoliosis, a brace may be prescribed. Braces are normally worn for 13 to 16 hours a day and are used to prevent the curvature from getting worse. Most commonly, braces are made out of plastic and contoured to the body. These go under the clothes and are basically invisible. Braces are discontinued when the child stops growing. The other option is surgery. There are three types of surgery. The first type of surgery is spinal fusion. In this surgery, two or more of the vertebrae, which are the bones in the spine, are fused. This stops them from being able to move independently. To do this, they put bone or bone-like material in between the vertebrae they are fusing. While the new and old bone fuses together, they use various materials such as rods, hooks, screws, or wires to hold it into place. The second type is the expandable rod. This is used if the scoliosis is progressing rapidly in very young children. In this procedure, surgeons attach one or two expandable rods along the spine. This can be adjusted as the child grows. These rods are lengthened every 3 to 6 months with either surgery or in the clinic using a remote control. The final surgery is vertebral body tethering. This procedure can be done via small incisions using screws placed outside the spinal curve with a strong flexible cord being threaded through these screws. When the cord is tightened, the spine straightens. Where would I find this in the media? Some famous people with scoliosis include Usain Bolt. Yes, the world's fastest man does have scoliosis. It has caused him some injuries and led him to adjust the way he runs and trains. Broadway star Liza Minnelli also has scoliosis, finding out later in life due to interactions with a young girl with scoliosis and a co-worker. There are a few books on scoliosis, such as Spines, The Art of Scoliosis by Sydney Luba. Sydney is a photographer who takes you on a journey through the uniqueness of the condition through her photographs of women with the condition. In the first link after our website, there is some book suggestions from the National Spine Foundation if you have a child who was recently diagnosed or is in the process of diagnosis. These may be helpful. However, they're more tailored towards little girls, so use this at your discretion, I guess you could say. The National Spine Foundation also has some other really great resources for those wanting to learn more, so you can always just click on that link and just go through that website. Two-part documentary-type film on scoliosis is Bent But Not Broken. This film is about dancers with scoliosis. This is by the Paige Fraser Foundation. This foundation offers dance programs for those with and without disability, with half of their programs focusing on spine health. One of their founders, the namesake of the foundation, is a professional ballerina with scoliosis. The link to this foundation with the first part of the film is the second link in the description after our website. If you're Australian, a foundation with some great resources is Scoliosis Australia. This will be the third link in our description after our website. And also the Children's Scoliosis Foundation is another great resource to check out, which will be the fourth link. If you want to check out the sources, social media links, or any other links, you can head to anatomyofillness.com. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to hear more, subscribe to be notified about our latest episodes. If you have any ideas for upcoming episodes, you can contact us on Instagram. Otherwise, stick around for the next episode. Why didn't the ghost go to the Halloween party? Because he had nobody to go with.